Welcome to the Dope CFO Podcast, where you can find the best information for accountants and bookkeepers that want to start and grow a highly profitable and flexible remote cannabis accounting firm. With your host, Andrew Hunziker. Now that's dope.
Hey everybody, this is Andrew Hunziker, CPA, also CFO, founder of Dope CFO as well. About my background, I've been a CPA for over 25 years, was at a big four, including PricewaterhouseCoopers. I won the gold medal award for the highest score in the CPA exam, as well as was runner up for the Portland, Oregon Business Journal CFO of Year Award in 2017. And I was the first ever cannabis CFO to be nominated. Done lots of startup work as well. And love teaching all of our community. We have now over 500 people in all 50 states in our Dope CFO program.
All right. Hey, everybody. This is Andrew again, back with another episode. Very excited to have Wally Daniel on the show today, principal consultant of Green Garden Consulting. We'll dive in a little bit more on that as we get in. Rich background. Wally's a lab and field scientist with experience in horticulture, controlled environment agriculture, lean manufacturing, and lean farming, as well as a bachelor's degree in biology and a master's where you study biogeochemistry, whatever the heck that is, of soils, groundwater, and seas. Just looking through even your LinkedIn, you know, it's really amazing. You've got a very, very deep, long, you know, decades long education in farming and soil and agriculture, and also tied into the cannabis space for 10 years or more. And being on the West Coast, where I know we kind of pride ourselves that we got the best growers out here as well. But why don't you fill in a little color on your background, and then we'll dive in. I will note at the top, we'll talk a little bit about Wally and I met in 2016, I think, at Hi-Fi Farms, which was a farm here in Oregon. So we'll talk about some of our experiences there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Some applicable concepts and experiences from that project for sure. Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me. My background. So yeah, I'm basically a classically trained scientist, right? I got a bachelor's and master's in what are essentially life sciences and earth sciences, right? You referenced biology, bachelor's in biology, done everything from ecological stuff, botany, yeah, the works. And then my master's degree, I kind of got into, it's technically in marine and atmospheric science, but my advisor was a geochemist, and my thesis work and everything was mostly soil science and soil biogeochemistry, study trace mineral cycling, kind of subject to seasonality, that kind of thing. So, you know, I'm a nerd, a classic nerd by training. And I kind of come at everything with a critical eye and a data-driven lens, I guess, is what I put in the background. From grad school, I went straight into horticulture and specifically cannabis. So I've been in cannabis since 2011, both medical and adult use contexts, myriad production models, ways of doing things, cultivation techniques, but again, all kind of rooted in data-driven inquiry and sort of iterative processes to improve things. And then that also, and so parallel to that is professional development in horticultural science, crop science, formally from online courses and that kind of stuff. And also through my network here in the Willamette Valley, which, you know, has a reputation for really professional and really competitive horticulture and agricultural techniques. So I think that,
yeah, that's a great lead in. And so you mentioned the Willamette Valley. I can never say because I'm from Oklahoma. The whole area, kind of Portland, you think of the East Coast and South down into Medford. Yeah. It's just considered a great growing area, whether you're talking about fruits and vegetables, wine, cannabis, of course. So it's a great place to be. And obviously you get to work with some of the best growers and many of the people that maybe have knowledge dating back decades. So what I want to jump into is let's geek out a little bit on some of the kind of farming itself, and then we'll evolve into costs and running a business and setting up an operation better. And especially as the cannabis movement, you know, we're extremely entrenched now on the West Coast. We're legal in most Western states. We're going to see a huge growth east of Colorado to the East Coast. And many of these people are going to be founding indoor and outdoor grows with lots and lots of money, but very, very weak on expertise. And so we'll dive into that as well. But why don't we kind of look at the journey of a plant from kind of planting it to seed to flower, just really even just talking about what are the steps of growing and what are the different amounts of time it can take. And so we're going to come back to this later. So a tool we developed out at Hi-Fi Farms called the Flower Calendar, we needed to estimate as accountants every single month. We need to know every plant on that farm that could be 10,000. We need to know the percent complete. So we need to know the average grow cycle for that strain. We need to know the average yield for that strain so we can get equivalent units to do cost accounting on. So it's very, very important to understand deeply the science. And when you think about, like next door, say to Hi-Fi, they were growing blueberries. Blueberries are blueberries. Well, when you grow cannabis, there could be 1,000 different strains that take different times to grow, different yields, et cetera. So why don't we kind of start there and just keep in the back of your head that it's not just growing a cannabis plant and they all take 180 days from seed to sale. As well, because it's very complex. People always ask me, why is this any different than growing apples or whatever? It's a little bit different.
Yeah, I can speak to that. Well, we've already talked about, or you kind of teased lean methodology, Toyota production system. So I kind of like to approach this as a tour through the value stream. And basically, we're constricting this particular crop. It's very similar to floriculture. We're kind of putting it, it's not necessarily, it is an annual crop if you were to grow it outside, but in a controlled environment, which pretty much all commercial production is, we're forcing it to flower at some point. So we're constricting it to a time period, and we're trying to highly control that, highly gather cost data like you're talking about for that given model. So just to run through it through the value stream, you generally got nursery and propagation, then a vegetative stage, and then a flowering stage. The difference between the vegetative stage and flowering stage is the difference in photoperiod or the amount of light received for duration of time. So walking through that, nursery and propagation, the most common propagation is clonal propagation in the industry. And that's where you got mother stock.
Pretend we're first graders. So when you throw words around like propagation, what does that mean? And then tell us how it is. Yes. Okay. So be very basic on this, because some of our listeners will be like, what the heck is propagation? They're going to be out there Googling it.
Totally. Yeah. Scientists, come back down. I pride myself in being the, like, you know, grounded one. So, but thank you. Come on back. Yeah, let's bring it down. So, all right. Again, the value stream there. Let's just look at the big blocks there. Nursery and propagation, vegetative, flowering, and then we get into harvest processing a lot downstream. Nursery and propagation. Propagation is essentially, you know, the humble beginnings of a plant, whether that's cracking a seed like we did with beans in science class in, you know, elementary school, or whether it's a more precise technique, which is more or less industry standard on the horticulture, general horticulture side as well, where you've got a mother plant or like a large plant, and you're taking precise cuttings off of that mother plant, and you're dipping the severed end of that into a rooting hormone, or whether that be synthetic or naturally derived. And then you put it in a medium and an incubation chamber of some size. And over time, at the right conditions, all those cuttings will develop roots. And that's essentially your production stock right there. And the reason this is called a clonal propagation, because it's all clones of that same mother plant. So it's essentially that mother plant, but a bunch of little plantlets, the exact same genetic. So therefore, production quality, you can guarantee uniformity because you're just growing the same genetic.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in a few times and ask questions along the way, because I'll wave you, because I want to ask. So clarify before we move on, mother, is there male versus female implants for one? And two, I like that analogy, what they call clones. And this relates to cost, because I've had farmers say, well, it doesn't cost me anything to grow weed, because I can clip it's like going out in your garden. I can just take my scissors, clip a leaf off, plant it in this little dirt over here in a little pot I found in the shed, and I'm going to grow a pound of weed. So talk about the mother plant, and do mother plants wear out, or do they just produce an endless amount of clones?
That's a great question. So the cost is more or less associated with that cycle you just said, the mother stock cycle. Depending on the grower and the organization, they do cycle out, right? You do want to rotate that, whether it's taking a new cutting and making a new mother stock, or whether you're having multiple mothers and you're running a smaller production schedule, if you will, like 4 months as opposed to 6 months of a mother cycling out. So yeah, so it isn't just free. There is maintenance associated with your mother stock, and there's a whole science to that and quality assurance in that nursery and propagation as well. So, and again, not a lot of, so I guess the argument is there's not this annual like buying of seed cost, you know, another ag, although there are some biosciences companies right now working on, you know, developing very homogenized seed stock for cannabis, but it is still a cost. And I still think qualitatively mother stock and mother stock maintenance is more cost effective.
And that's what most of the, and so the, so, okay. So we're at that point where the mother plants, they're in a controlled environment, like we're saying indoor typically. And we'll see a lot of this as we go towards the East Coast. And then you cut your clones, plant them in your little pots. And then kind of what's the next stage we go from there, from after the propagation?
Great. So yeah, propagation, as you kind of mentioned, is in these little chambers with high humidity generally that foster new growth of roots and that kind of thing. Then you get into formal vegetative stage where you're taking those root, what we call rooted cuttings in general horticulture speak. You're plopping those in the pot you mentioned of various size depending on your model. And the next stage is vegetative stage where you're literally nurturing those little plantlets, right? Hence nursery and propagation to, depending on the model and the size of the container, 1 to X weeks, literally depending on the model. And why I say X weeks, the model depends on kind of your planting density or flowering stage, which is the next stage. So in a controlled environment, you know, your kind of grid layout of your plants, like what is that planting density? And, you know, upstream, you determine how many cuttings you're going to take and how many you're nurturing in that vegetative stage.
And just a quick point there to also do the complexity, think of a chef and a secret recipe, and, you know, whether it's Chick-fil-A that's got their special recipe or whoever's got their special recipe, every grower has their little special recipe, like you said, on their model. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm going to grow plants this big and turn them over constantly. And at this stage, and other people are going to grow different ways. So there's different methodologies, right? On if you set your farm up, and there's going to be pros and cons to how you grow those plants and convert it into the sellable flower.
Yep. Yeah, precisely. Seems to be in indoor, there are some kind of like densities or pot sizes that are kind of settling on industry standard, you know, where it's like a plant per square foot, and you're in 1 gallon pots, and you're growing in an inert media, which I knew we wanted to talk about, like a cocoa core or rock wool. But yeah, to your point, there's different growers have different models based on that end result. And man, even the scientific community is still trying to figure out what is the best planting density downstream and flowering stage. But what I've seen personally and just among my scientific colleagues is it can kind of vary a little bit by variety, or you're having to manipulate the plants, either grow them a little bit longer in that vegetative stage or do more plant work and more essentially pruning work in that vegetative stage, which we're kind of back to like, hey, Wally, tell us what happens in that veg stage. There is a lot of plant work that happens during that vegetative stage to essentially create the structure of your canopy or whatever your next, you know, model desire is in flowering stage in the vegetative stage. So you are manipulating the plant to, in a lot of cases, create more main stems and sort of an even canopy in the kind of traditional, what you see in the magazine shots or the indoor shots of like just a sea of colas very tidily organized. A lot of that, a lot of the bedrock of that happens in vegetative stage. And that's where there's very specific marks to hit with, you know, your labor. And there's even, you can even get granular about KPIs in that starting there. Well, honestly, you can get granular with KPIs starting in nursery and nursery and propagation and just generally your success rate in that clonal propagation, tracking that.
Well, that's a great point. And we'll hit kind of the cost matrix as we run through this, especially as accountants or business owners or investors. We're all concerned with cost. And when you just look at farming in general over the last couple hundred years, you know, my great granddad had a cotton farm in Oklahoma. Farming is tough and it's expensive. And, you know, we went through Farm Aid back in the 80s or whatever. It's tough to run a farming operation. And so sometimes the people that come in with this kind of gold rush mentality, I'm going to open a farm and make a killing. It's like farming's very tough. Like you got to say every step of the way, you got to be evaluating your costs. So we moved to vegetation. How do you turn a vegetative plant into a flowering plant?
Yeah, right on. Well,
and by flowering, I mean growing that good bud that everyone wants to smoke.
That's right. Well, cannabis in plant science speak is a short day plant, which means in a natural setting, flowering is initiated by a change of the seasons or shortening of the day, right? It's like a classic autumn harvest flowering plant, like wine grapes, table grapes, et cetera. So the determinant of that in a natural setting is the photo period, which I mentioned earlier in this conversation. And so you manipulate the photo period by basically turning it into a 12-hour day is kind of the industry standard. So whether that's in the same place you've been doing that vegetative growth or whether there's a physical movement to a new growing chamber, we're just changing the light cycle. So that's what triggers flowering. And then we're in flowering stage, which has its own set of sub stages to get to what you said, that nice aromatic chunky bud that we all know and appreciate.
And what's the range of time that it can take flowering? Because ultimately I want to get, because this is a key number we tell our students in our program, that we've got to know that growth cycle from literally planting the cloner seed all the way to the flower being tested at the lab and brought back. And maybe for some grows it's 90 days, for some grows it's 180 days. How long generally, is there a general flowering stage or is it going to go anywhere from months to weeks?
No, I think in general, 8 to 10 weeks for most varieties, you know, accepted on the market. There's some that'll finish a little earlier and then there's some that'll go way later. But unfortunately, because of, you know, the thinning of the margins in the industry, most everything's constrained to that, like, 8 to 10 weeks or like 9 weeks being the sweet spot, because like you're saying, you want to guarantee like 5 turns a year in the facility or approaching 6. So if you're growing longer flowering varieties, it throws that production timeline off, like you're saying. And, you know, depending on what you're fetching on the market, you know, it just may not be worth it to grow. If you're getting the same price, even if consumers demand it, it just may not be worth it.
And let's just take a little detour. I know we've got all our questions written out, but it always happens like this. It's like, I'm so inquisitive. I just want to ask what I want to know. But I'll call you out of here for one. You helped one of our Dope CFO VIP members with a client on the East Coast. And this is how important this is for, we often get this question all the time. CEOs, oh, I haven't raised my money yet. I don't need accountants. It's like, oh, yes, you do. So the first thing we find is before a farm is even purchased and a seed's ever planted in the ground, what happens? That owner's trying to raise money because farms are very freaking expensive. And so when they raise money, they build a financial model. And what new CEOs love to do is they like to say they're going to grow tens of thousands, millions of pounds of weed every week, and they're going to sell them all for $5,000 a pound forever into the future. And that, as we learned at our former employer, that's really what we worked at a farm that went through close to $10 million and went under. And they had a good team, a great product, a spectacular location in Oregon. We had Wally, who was an amazing grower. And it wasn't enough because they didn't budget their capital correctly. If I had been involved earlier at the model phase, and this is how you help somebody, our VIP reached out and I connected her with you. And it was like, look, these numbers just look wrong on the production and the pricing. And they were way, way off, it turns out. And you really helped with that. So maybe you speak to that a little bit. We want to make sure we have the cost reasonable and production forecast reasonable in that very first financial model way before we were ever planting anything anywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree. And I mean, that's why you connected me with her. And the devil's in the details there for me. And, you know, I market myself as coming at it from a very conservative or and sober sense, right? Of like, hey, I've got all this internal data. I got a large network of, you know, growers who are very numbers oriented. So yeah, the case in point, your colleague, yeah, generally numbers are inflated or they're ambitious or, you know, there's a lot of romance and generally it's like, hey, let's dial this back. Let's, like you're saying, let's get this right the first time, or if anything, let's be a little bit below target, right? Let's under promise, over deliver, not the converse. Nobody likes being in that situation. And I know from experience working with you previously and a bunch of other clients, like no investor likes to be in that scenario either. So there's some data and, again, back to the devil's in the details, there's nuances to like, hey, what do these numbers mean? Not just like, oh, here's our projected yield. I'm like, no, but there's at least four subcategories in that yield number. What, you know, are we accounting for the ratio of A buds to B buds to sort of usable trim to some other ancillary thing? And do you have a skilled enough grower or team that's going to achieve this, you know, perfect ratio right out of the gate? Right. So back to the person you referenced, it's like, I generally advise a phased approach of like, even if you have a solid team, if you're in a controlled environment, precision situation, that's new construction, or even if it's retrofitted construction, you got to account for just the, anomalies out of the gate or the unforeseen. So it all kind of supports your point of like, yeah, let's be very soberly real out of the gate. And then let's track it and try to stay and hit the mark or do better than we forecast at the modeling stage.
And I love how you said the word romance. I thought of that. It's like, oh yeah, I can go tell this girl that I'm amazing and she's going to love me and all this. And then I hide all these things in my background. And that was actually the issue that started before we ever got to the farm stage that doomed us from the first, because it is a trade-off. So yes, if I go tell investors that we got this team and the secret recipe and we're going to grow and kill it with all this money, yeah, you can actually raise. And that's happened at Hi-Fi. We were able to raise capital left and right because it looked so good. But that hurt us in the long run. It's better. I tell people my strategy is I hope for the best. So I might have a model that here's my really hoped for case. I plan for the expected, what I really think is going to happen, but I prepare for the worst. So I'm going to look at what happens if we think production in year one is going to start in August, but we actually get knocked out for some reason from the county and we don't start for 6 months later. Do we have enough money to survive? So that's a great point. Well, why don't we jump back to the grow cycle? we got the propagation and we went vegetative and then we're flowering. And then what are some of the stages from there of harvesting, et cetera? And like you're saying, every step of the way, we're looking at what costs and you're measuring everything, like who's doing what in the field. And maybe we can even layer in a little bit of the lean conversation here. I remember when lean consultant came out to us, one issue was like, how much time does Sally or Joe need to spend to find that shovel? Because Joe used it and left it over in field B. And all this time wasted where you can literally track every second of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great segue. I mean, the general principle you said right there is just movement waste, or being aware of movement waste and centrally locating, you know, the most essential tools, equipment, whatever. And then, yeah, we could start the conversation. It's relevant in vegetative stage too, but also flowering. Knowing the cycle time of every procedure. First of all, let me back up and say I'm an operator and sort of lean practitioner. Like SOPs aren't just a placeholder for me. It's like, hey, we have SOPs that are updated regularly. The managers and the assistant managers are setting the examples of looking back to them. Where I'm going with this is embedded in that SOP should be a reasonable cycle time for that procedure. And then I go as far as on the op side, encouraging the head grower or whomever is the operations sort of lead to have a labor forecaster. Like you're saying, embedded in that forecast are the reasonable cycle times that we're sort of continually trying to shave time off, organizationally speaking. But we're also forecasting accurately the labor for the next 2 weeks, you know. Are there work bubbles that are coming on top of each other? Are we adequately staffed? It's kind of a part accountability, but part cost effectiveness and just general efficiency, right?
And that's a great segue. Yeah, so every piece of this puzzle is cost. So if it takes Sally 3 hours a day to water those 100 plants, but someone else can do it quicker, whatever. You're always looking for those efficiencies. Yeah. When we talk about lean methodology real quickly, it was created, I believe, out of Toyota in the 70s. When Toyota kind of took over the world, it was like they looked at every single process, who's doing what and why, and is it needed? And does it add value ultimately? And so where lean ties into dollars, like we're looking at the cost of every process, both in time and dollars, and we're trying to increase that efficiency and productivity and value add. So it's very, very important as you go down the strain. And then like you had mentioned earlier too, about all these things that just pop up unexpected, like, oh, your neighbor, and I remember this happening, they were spraying their blueberries out of an airplane with harmful chemicals. And over here next door, we were saying clean, green, certified organic weed, but some of those chemicals were seeping in and you can paint or spoil a product. So maybe jump in there and talk about some of the innovative techniques to just be prepared for these things that you might not be thinking about in that financial model that can happen.
Yeah, the unforeseen.
Or forest fires.
Sorry, I talked over you there.
No worries. Yeah, just jump in there.
That's the unforeseen, right? The both these sort of acts of God, right, and legal speak, or just lack of foresight. Let's just be honest. So I would answer that. I would answer the question with just proper due diligence upstream at the modeling stage in my part of the job, or when I'm liaising with the accounting professional, or you know whomever else. Just. I think I wrote a piece on it once of just like the sort of due diligence checklist with regard to your example, like what are your neighbors doing? What are they up to? What are their agricultural practices? And just try to mitigate that risk out of the gate. Maybe it means you don't even choose that location. So I would just answer that question of like, I think a lot can be mitigated with just adequate foresight, and you don't know what you don't know. So try to get someone who does, whether that's a consultant or a subject matter expert or somebody or one of your buddies who's already done it, you know, and is successful. You know, I kind of abide by that advice principle, you know, take advice from people who have done what you want to do and are doing well at it. You know, that's kind of my answer to that. Just think about, deliberate on it beforehand and don't be afraid to ask the tough questions is kind of, and then in the moment, I mean, you know, stuff's going to happen. Just hope you got a good, team to figure out the answer, or you're surrounded by a good team. Now, is that, please lead me on a more sort of incite you scenario, but that's my opinion.
And which brings me back to, again, when I think of farmers and think of old farmers from Oklahoma or whatever, they lived there 7 days a week and they were farming 7 days a week. And they were, it wasn't like, oh, it's Friday, we left for the weekend and we come back and the crop's destroyed. You got to have people that are, have that mentality, for one, that this is always good. But what about, so we talked about through all these stages, we don't have to dive too deep in. Once the flower or the bud is ready to go, we can, you know, we've got to obviously harvest it, dry it, cure it, have the trimmers trim it to get the good A and B buds and trim, and then get it to the lab and testing. That can take another 2 or 3 or 4 weeks or whatever. Of course, you've got efficiencies there as well. And even another one, security. You may not worry about people stealing blueberries as much as weeds, pretty valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
And so,
yeah, you kind of glossed over all, you know, or you kind of followed the track for usable smokable flower more or less accurately, but there's, yeah, like you said, there's time allotted to those processes. And when I generally design a model for someone or come into someone's existing ERP or whatever, it's like, hey, do we have accurate, again, the theme talking to me about operations and science and just scientific monitoring and stuff too, of the actual living system that you're managing is, you know, accuracy. So, and I know that speaks to you and accounting professionals, like we need accurate numbers. It all boils down to the same conversation. I think scientists to accounting professional, we need accurate data to make accurate forecasts and, you know, make.
Now, that's a great lead in here to the next question about studies, or are you collecting data from various farms? So you're like, okay, you're going to grow Gorilla Glue. I'm pretty certain you can get 0.76 pounds. So a lot of times in models, people are like, before the farm started, like, oh, we're going to grow 1,000 plants and we're going to get a pound of sellable weed from every plant. But you can really fine tune that in different strains of, and you track that data. Here's this yield from this product versus another strain.
Yeah. That's absolutely. Now you're speaking to me with like plant scientist hat on and operations hat on. Absolutely. Like I'm a big proponent of spec sheets per variety, just like, you know, for varieties of petunias or some other floriculture crop, right? Like the analogous industry here does this. It's already there, and horticultural scientists will encourage that. In fact, I think CRC, they're based out of South Carolina, Cannabis Research Coalition. Very recently, they even put out a post about, hey, developing plant spec sheets. But this all speaks to like, yes, Andrew, I keep data on every variety. I'm always seeking gaining efficiencies or insight to optimizing that variety. If it is one that's popular that we can do multiple times, I try to help clients, growers, everyone capture the data that kind of passively makes a spreadsheet. So you could literally just look back to, hey, what did we do last time on that one? What were the conditions? What was the fertility regimen that we did? You know, have we done it a few times? What is it the same every time? And then, you know, as far as studies go, I guess that sort of qualifies as a study right there, right? We're just basically keenly observing every variety that we care about. Furthermore, I think with experience, you get a lot of like accidental experiments, right? Of like something goes wrong, or, you know, act of God, all the staff got COVID, for instance, and you miss a bunch of key marks on your, say, physical plant manipulation strategy or something like that. So you can gain a lot of really empirical data just by like happenstance or experience or having a good network of like, you know, mistakes or not forecasting labor accurately. So we missed some key marks and therefore yield was an outlier for that variety because we missed some key marks on the production side of things. So, and I, as a classically trained scientist, I'm generally taking notes on that or I've got a spreadsheet that's already developed to capture that data, or I'm encouraging folks to just do some sort of written record that you can look back to at the very least.
Well, and that leads me right into what are some good KPIs that we can run to for the farm that'll be useful to the investors or board? And what specific data do you like to track at a big or small size? And then even the thought of benchmarking, like it's like, oh, the most farmers that grow Gorilla Glue only spend this amount of labor to do it and get this amount of yield. Are we doing better than the industry or worse? That's how investors often want to know, how are we doing compared to the farmer next door?
Yeah, I hear that. I think there's a new, I think presently, right, at time of recording, October 27th, 2023, it's tough because we got to speak to the nuance of cannabis on that one, right? Like, I'm basically skeptical of anyone's data unless I know them, right? So it's hard to compare because there's still this like smoke and mirrors and the devil's in the details of the numbers. Someone says a number, but what does it really mean? So it's tough to compare apples to apples. This kind of goes back to my more conviction to capture your own data from day one, you know, so you know exactly what it is. And then, but specific KPIs are, I think, a block and tackle scenario from an accounting perspective, like cost per batch, cost per plant, you know, grams per finished flower, grams per derivative product. You know, I'm kind of, there's a whole lot of complexities in getting those, but at the end of the day, that's like yield efficiency. And KPIs that I track are yield, quality, production batch cost in the context of like human resources, you know, like trying to set the grower up for success, but also charging the grower with like, if you beat last year's cycle production cost by X percent, bonus, you know, stuff like that. I know I'm kind of being subjective here, but you get the picture. But the main ones are yield, quality as defined by the market, wherever you're at, of jurisdiction. That's line item cost, whether it's, you know, I get a lot into fertilizer, right, as an example, because there's a lot of cannabis industry fertilizers that come already mixed that are quite pricey, and you can literally, you know, tank that fertilizer cost by switching to a more, you know, industry, horticulture industry or ag industry available fertilizer regime, and decrease that by like 8x out of the gate, or even 12x sometimes out of the gate. So
yeah, and
I think that's is that
oh yeah, that's, you know,
I
think that's great, and I'll reiterate a couple of them. So it's one thing is the industry so new, and when we look at valuing or comparing companies, whether it's dispensaries or farms, it's very tricky. Pricing's different in every state, but I think you hit it on the head. Monitor your own data, because benchmarking, we may be 5 or 10 years away from really knowing this is what it costs to grow a strawberry. But also that, so the ways you can increase that profitability on the farm are either in, so on the quality is a huge one. So like, I know a grower here in Bend, Oregon, that the Oregon average price per pound goes up and down to zero and just all over the place, but they've maintained a very consistent high dollar. So that's a benchmark we can track. So if we know, and say we're in Michigan and we know, okay, the average price per pound of weed is $1,000 and we're selling our weed at $1,500, if we're outselling the market, that means our quality is better. That would be something I'd really be focused on if I was a craft grower. I want to, you know, we do that in our accounting program. There's always room at the top. There's always the room for that high quality product. That's the end of the market I would want to be in. So that's one way to increase our profitability. The other way, of course, is getting those efficiencies from lean and lowering our cost per, what does it cost to get that $1,500 a pound? Does it cost us $500 per pound? And even when you ask, and I have the same deal, I don't believe any of the costs I see. So Michigan, I read a report yesterday, and they asked all these farmers how much did it cost them to grow a pound of weed. and it went from like 300 to 1,000. And I was like, I don't believe any of their data. I know 8 out of 10 of them aren't doing cost accounting. You can't even know the value of your weed if you're, and so there, again, it's just made up numbers. And just because someone tells you that's their cost doesn't mean it's accurate. So we've really got to focus on our own farm. I think that's a key thing. Our KPIs may not be like, we may be metricing against ourselves. Where can we find we might look at fertilizer costs is really high. How can we reduce that? And I think you're indicating real clearly, and we'll hit you up in a second, just how valuable you and your consulting can be to a client, because if there's a lot of subtleties in how you can save money. And if you, like if you were me and I started a farm in Oklahoma and I knew, wouldn't even occur to me like, oh, maybe there's a way we can make our fertilizer ourselves.
Yeah.
And so that's huge as well. Is there any specific software that you think is great for farming? I know you mentioned Excel. I still, in my brain, Excel is the best software that ever was invented. I use it all the time. I don't, as much as software is gone and as much as AI is everywhere, I just don't see us getting away from Excel for quite a long time in the accounting world or other. Do you have any other software recommendations?
Andrew, I'm kind of on the same page, man. No, I've been pitched a lot of the software. We both know a lot of money's been poured into innovative ERP software specifically for cannabis. But man, I've managed huge volumes of data as a scientist with just Excel or Google Sheets, the analogous Excel cloud form. So, and I'll just speak to, I'm not gonna badmouth any of these very industry specific ERPs or platforms, but it just seems like they'd be better for a really large organization, but they generally come with like an extra cost, or you almost need another staff member to kind of be the glue for the thing, right? Or there's a subscription, or then their business model changed because the cannabis climate changed and now it costs more, right? So I know I'm speaking, preaching to the choir on this one. So I'm just like, hey, a lot of my clients is like, what's your preferred platform as an organization, right? Like, are you on G Suite? Are you on Microsoft Teams? And then, we've got an Excel spreadsheet that tracks everything we want, nothing we don't want, right? Offered in a lot of these other platforms or sold in these other platforms that it's like, sure, we would like to track that at some point, but we're not ready as an organization right now. And that's a distraction right now, right? Like, we just need these core data captures. And my man Andrew's already got the template. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
Or Wally's already got the template. Let's just put it in there, and now it's a shared just data input thing.
And it's in this modern complex world, oftentimes because of cost, and this again goes back to cost. And we've talked about cost in this whole folder when we come into this. The nice thing, same with QuickBooks on the accounting side, most cannabis companies use QuickBooks, I think 8 out of 10 or something like that, because it's simple. And so if Sally's running the accounting and she quits, we can bring in Joe and he can figure it out. Lickety split. Same with Excel. If someone quits or leaves, we don't need to retrain. One of the issues I've always had with ERP, if you're not a company the size of Nike or whatever, that cost a fortune to set up and implement and then train all these people, and then support might be difficult. They might start charging you more money. And then when people quit, you got to retrain new people. It can be incredibly complex. So I generally caution against that level of complexity. I'd rather have something that is simpler and we're really monitoring. I think that comes back to the lean methodology of literally looking, what are we doing? How are we tracking? So for example, a piece of software that I think is useful, and I think there's a ton of these, I want to know exactly, like I want the people out on the farm tracking their time. And I don't know if you use any of this like time trackers. So if I clock in at 9 and I leave at 5, where do I go that 8 hours? Am I watering for 3 hours? And then am I just chasing the dogs around the farm for an hour? Or what am I actually doing? Because then you can start finding efficiencies there as well.
Yeah, I hear that. I just want to say like everything you said, like, great point. And to the point of like, or to the extent you can't see under my my clothes here, but I got chills because I feel the same way, right? It's like, especially what you said about, you know, having to hire a new person, or like I referenced, you got to have someone who's like the glue of the thing. And yeah, if they bolt, oh man, you know, there's a vacuum for a skilled individual or a training or a time, right? That, and as we know in the current cannabis climate, especially West Coast, man, even just a little vacancy like that can have a ripple effect that you feel in 6 or 9 months that could be business killing, you know? So, and I'm speaking from experience, right?
And that leads us in our, as we kind of head towards wrap up, the accountants working with people and growers. So here's an issue we see on the accounting side a lot. Regional, local, national firms, they have too many clients, not even just cannabis, elsewhere, too much work. They think, oh, I got a farm client, no big deal. I'll just check in once a month for a couple hours and not even understand any of this stuff. So how can our recommendations as the accountants go way deeper with fewer clients and provide a deeper level of service? And part of that is getting, we call it walkthroughs, getting to know. If you get a farm client, we want to walk around the farm and see who's doing what and how do they do it and what's going on. How do you have any recommendations for accountants working with growers and not just staying hidden in the background and getting their hands dirty, I guess, is a way to say it.
Yeah, you said exactly what I was about to say. Like literally and figuratively, go get your hands dirty, like understand it. Because throughout this conversation, we've talked about some of the nuances of this sort of specialty crop production business, but there's going to be nuances based on the grower's preferences or that organization's, you know, secret sauce. And by that, I mean, not just what they're doing or putting into the plant, but just their general cultural vibe, right? Like, are we here to work? Or are we here to like, yeah, casually chase the dogs around? And the accountant can kind of can generally add some muscle to even just cultural tighten ups. So
yeah,
and I would say get involved, and like you're saying, go deeper rather than shallower, because then you already know you built a business around it. Like there's complications and nuances on the accounting side with 280E and all that. So like, you got to be, yeah, I would say be focused and develop a relationship with the people who are the decision makers on the production side. And by that, I mean the plant production side or the processing side. So your communication is crystal clear, you know, and back to this data capture moment, everyone knows the precise data that you're trying to capture and why it's important. And you're all speaking the same language there. And it's not like, oh, that's our yield number. It's like, no, our yield number comprises these categories, and we need a precise number in there every time, right?
So, which brings me to another thing, walking around back in my farm days, of a couple of things. I think I'll bring up one. I think Haley, who still works with you, I remember one going in there to her farm, and she had a spreadsheet. I was like, what are you doing there? And she was calculating with a fine tooth comb our yield per strain and how it was changing over time on these specific plants. And I was like, holy crap, I need that data to do my cost accounting. And I just, if I hadn't been walking around the farm, she might not have ever told me. She had no idea what I was doing. I'll tell you another thing I found walking around the farm. As we were counting plants and inventory counts, there was a big farm and lots of buildings. And I walked around the corner and there was a whole bunch of outdoor plants. And I was like, what are these? And it's like, oh, these are the plants that are not in metric, that were kind of growing on the side. And it's like, sure. Oh man, I don't want to hear that. That's we don't, as accountants, serve illegal clients, and that's breaking the law and can cause you a lot of trouble. So you need to get out there and look around and make sure you know what's going on at the farm at least a couple of times. So we looked at a lot of the costs. Why don't we dive in? And this will relate as well to what you're doing with your latest consulting firm. We will put everywhere people can find you in the show notes, but you can also say if they can find you on Instagram or wherever, and then how you can help help, whether it's a brand new grow, they're just thinking about raising money, or an existing grow, how you can help them, you know, increase profitability.
Yeah, thank you. I guess we should call it the current iteration of my consultancy, because I opened it several years ago, just seeing it was seeing there was a need for just helping and then trying to be professional, right? Like, all right, I should, you know, organize this as an LLC and, you know, have separate banking and figure that whole thing out, right? So, but the current iteration is, I guess, just a distillation of all my experience and my team's experience. You know, three of my really good friends, I get to call team members, and we kind of cover the whole value stream from, as we said in this podcast, you know, seed or propagation all the way through derivative products, whether that's product development, extraction, the whole thing. So that's where we're at right now. My sort of pitch of how I try to distill it down is we specialize in plants, processes, and people, all aimed at accelerating profitability. And whether that's, and then like you just said, doesn't matter where you're at. If you're pre-revenue, accelerating profitability means like we're trying to get to profitability faster and more efficiently. If you're already profitable, heck yeah, we're here to help. We're going to get you more money faster, or we're not doing our job. So I could go into plants, processes, and people, but it's pretty, just think of, this is Wally the scientist now. Plants is everything regarded to quality management, fertility, scientific monitoring, basically generally accepted data capture and monitoring for a plant production business. And how are we going to optimize every strain, and how are we going to guarantee consistency and reproducibility of production batches? Process is pretty wide open there, right? Like commercial standards and practices is kind of, I think, how it's listed on the website, but also product development and general efficiencies or leaning up or architecture for standardization of a business. And it doesn't matter small scale or large scale. Like we said, back to this lean methodology, we need to standardize everything so we can track everything and so we can continually improve everything. People is kind of HR related, but also organizationally related in that, like, hey, we're a business. Let's have a chain of command. Let's stick to it. If that's how we're going to roll, let's have really coordinated roles and responsibilities that are based on like what's actually happening. You know, back to your like, hey, accountant, go check in and see who does what. You know, even look in on that HR side, and then general. I call it ERP architecture and establishment, but it's really that keep it simple, stupid mindset we already said of like, hey, what are you guys tracking? How do we know we're even doing well? Are the accounting people and the operations people adequately connected? Here's some templates that I think are right out of the gate, very valuable. And all you got to do is plug it in and it spits out all the data you want. So I think that's it. And best ways to contact me are like LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there, the messaging on LinkedIn, or just go to the website, which is greengardenconsulting.org, or just email info@greengardenconsulting.org. I'm kind of keep it simple and calm too, because, you know, we got to get after it. And the ethos is kind of like very professional boutique consultancy. Like, hey, we're going to come in no matter where you're at and try to identify the low hanging fruit so that you see our value right out of the gate. Like I'm trying to contribute immediately towards, again, accelerating profitability.
Well, that is awesome. It's been so great to have you. I love that mindset of demonstrating value really quickly. And the whole people and processes and plants, and even you mentioned continuous improvement. I remember that word Kaizen out of lean methodology, that we're always looking to even, we'll prove it here and then we'll prove it again. And we'll keep improving it as well. Well, we'll put all the stuff in your show notes. We will also, maybe we'll do a later episode at some point on, because this is yet, we didn't even hit this at all. Once you got that flour, you might start thinking, why don't I just turn that flour into oil? Why don't I make my own gummy bears? Why don't I do those other things as well? It often makes sense to go that next step instead of just selling the flour and the trim off to anybody. We'll leave that for another show. But again, thank you so much for being here. We will post all that stuff. And yeah, if you're a CEO or accountant, I encourage you to reach out and connect with Wally. And you're one of the few people I've actually worked with in the past. So that's great to see. And I will see you in Las Vegas here in a month.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you so much, Andrew. This has been a lot of fun.
You've been listening to the Dope CFO Cannabis Accounting Podcast. Every other Monday, we air tips and insights on cannabis and CBD hemp accounting. Make sure you subscribe today and also check us out on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube. We're pretty much everywhere for more advice, tips, industry news as well. To find out more about our cannabis and CBD accounting program, visit dopecfo.com and don't forget to be dope.